we are not back, we're not all back in Parliament, that we can have one meeting, we can have a meeting under the same roof. The arrangement is that we maintain a hybrid system, and until such time we are advised otherwise. And due to the pandemic. So I know some of you in the United Front had wished that we meet with you, but it's clear that it was not possible that we could have a meeting with you, you know, physically. And I think we have now accepted the fact that technology is upon us, that in the event where we cannot all be in the same under the same roof, we can utilize you know, technology, you know, so that life could then go on. So in that way, let me just check who is with us representing the unintegrated forces, United Democratic Front. Can you announce yourself, colleagues? The representatives of the South African Unintegrated Forces, United Front. Do we have them on the platform, Peter?
They have a problem with that.
Would they go ahead?
No, Chair, they have a problem with the laptop, Chair.
They have a problem with the laptop.
Yeah, they have a challenge with the laptop, Chair.
Let me just check. Who's talking?
It's good just talking. Mangai.
Oh, yeah. And, all right. So it means that they are not online as yet.
No, no, Chair. I just called them now, Chair, and they have a problem with the laptop.
Which means that they are not going to link up with us.
Yeah, Chair.
Does it mean that?
I will call them like in the next 10 minutes, Chair, again.
All right. Once you do that, then let's look at the minutes. Please attend to that. You can then withdraw their presentation. Let's look at the minutes. And, okay. We have the minutes of the 5th of November, 2020. So this is the attendance list.
The person.
Yes, who is that?
Honorable Nkosi.
Oh, Honorable Nkosi, how are you, ma'am?
On the attendance register. I don't see my name again.
Oh, I see.
I don't see my name again. It's not there, and I was part of the meeting on that day.
On the 5th, yes. All right.
On the 5th, yes.
Yeah. Can her name be added, please? Who's taking note? Understand that Pat is not in the meeting because she is not well. She called me yesterday to say she is not well, and that... an arrangement will be made that someone stands for her. Who's standing in for Pat?
I'll manage that one. I'll check.
Okay, that's fine. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for holding the fort. All right, so okay, let's go down. All right, that's the attendance continues. Go down. That's the NIDC. And SATI attendance, and then it's remarks by myself, and then we go to number 4 is briefing by the industry, and then is the state. They took us through the state of the South African defense industry, start the impact, the industry impact in the economy. The aerospace and defense side challenges, right, go down. Export issues, way forward in assistance from the JSCD, all right. And that the presentation, but then there was a presentation by NDIC, and they gave us the policy options. They took us through the fact that there was a task team appointed on to look into the liquidity issues in Denel. And there was an issue about the resource-based alternative funding model. All right, and the localization and designation of small caliber weapons and ammunition, and black-owned suppliers and military veterans challenges. All right, go down. Update presented by the group CEO, Talib Sadiq. Responses by the NCACC. Then there was a presentation by a comment by AMSCO as Group CEO, and then 9 observations and comments by the committee. I don't know what's happening. Maxine Geert is. Can you mute your mic, please? Maxine Geert, can you mute your mic? Can you mute him, please? And then there were responses. And then we and recommendations and adjournment. Colleagues, are there any corrections that you want to have effected?
Chairperson, I've gone through that, and I couldn't find any that is required. So I think it is quite comprehensive. I must add.
Yes, indeed. Colleagues, thank you very much.
Correct.
Now, thanks, Mr. Mare, for moving. Any seconder?
I second, Chair. Honorable Butler.
Martha Bartlett, seconds. Thank you so much, colleagues. Can we move to the next set? The meeting of the 12th, briefing by the DMV. On the National Military Veterans Database and the consideration and adoption of minutes. So this is the attendance list. And there is Maxim Kiet. I don't know who he is. Gunther, who's Maxim Kiet? All right, and there's attendance, you go down. Departmental representatives at the meeting, and the minutes were adopted. And then we just jump, let's go to briefing by the Department of Military Veterans. That's the briefing, and you go down. And they gave us progress recorded in terms of updating, cleaning up the database. And these are the figures they gave us. Go down. And right, go down. Database credibility and security. Development of database management solution, discussion, go down, responses, and their recommendations and closure. All right, colleagues, any correction? Can I get a mover?
Chairperson?
Yes, Ethel?
Thank you very much. I stand to adopt the minutes as true reflection. Thank you.
That's Ms. Kosa.
Yes, Chair.
Okay. Thank you so much. The Ms. Kosa moves. And then Alexander Bukas seconds.
Yes.
Who's that?
Yes, Alexander.
Thank you so much. All right, can we move to, do we have another third? I don't think we have another third. Meaning of the 5th and the 12th and today's in Addis. All right, can we, Gunther, have our guest locked in? As yet? Not yet. All right.
Just call, I will contact them now, Chair. Let me call them.
All right, sure, okay. So this is the draft report of the Minister Symposium of the Joint Standing Committee on Defence. Colleagues, that's the first page, introduction paper of the Minister Symposium. Can you go down? And this is the attendance list. Go down. Committee members who were at the meeting and the staff that was present.
On the members next to my name. It's probably just a typing error, but the Democratic Alliances must be spelled correctly, please.
Oh, I see. You have not crossed the floor as yet.
I wish the floor cross legislation comes back.
All right. I remember those days. Okay, colleagues. Yeah. 1.3 overview of the mini symposium. All right, let's go down to 1.4. All right, there's no 1.4, it's 2. It's presentation by Professor Lindy Heineken. Took us through the contextual orientation. And she addressed the misalignment in the force design, and commented on the vision to action. Okay, go down. And then there was a presentation by Dr. Moses Kanyele, right, starting with the scope of the presentation. Go down. Force design versus force structure, and force structure planning dynamics, go down. And 3.3 points to ponder. She left us with a few points to reflect on. Then there was a presentation by Mr. Hazelmut Rommel Heitman. All right, SATF force design. SNTF minimum required force, and then another subtopic, it was SNTF personal strength and cost. Go down. SATF 40-30-30 principle, and then there was SNTF reducing personal cost, 4.6 SATF. Possible internal skills, and 4.7 SATF aging combat service, and then 4.8 SATF rank inflation, and then there was an input from the deputy minister. Concluding remarks by the presenters. Right, go down. And then there was observations by the committee. All right, going on. And then the recommendations. All right. And then the report, right, colleagues. I don't know if there are any issues to look at. Let's look at the observations. Can you take us through the observations and the recommendations?
Good evening, Chair. I can take you through the observations and recommendations quickly.
Please do, Dr. Vele Mielse van Rensburg.
All right. So in terms of observations, the first one relates to one of the main issues raised by members was the need to move forward from the untenable situation and for the need for short-term strategies to be developed to assist the SANDF, especially based on the things that was learned in the symposium. Secondly, based on the input specifically from Mr. Heitman, a question was asked whether the SANDF still really needs the SA Military Health Services as an independent arm of service, given the funding challenges of this arm of service. Thirdly, although it was previously observed by the Minister of Defence that we should not have another defence review, members felt that there is a need for urgent engagement on how to take the defence force forward. Next, the suggestion was made that the Joint Planning Committee of Defence needs to recommend to the Ministry that the DoD should submit a memorandum to Cabinet to obtain political clarity on what kind of SANDF we need and where such support will come from, and it specifically relates to financial support as well. Next concern was expressed that little of the 1998 defence review and even fewer of the latest 2015 defence review of those recommendations were actually implemented. And it was questioned whether it was an issue of non-implementation due to resource scarcity or whether it was due to an unwillingness to implement. Next, the observation was that while there was an agreement that certain members should exit the SANDF, members said that this should be done in a humane way, and questions remained as to how exactly these members should be exited from the system. Another observation, one of the important takeaways was the view that insisting on 75,000 members as force strength for the SANDF is unsustainable and the DoD should consider reviewing this position. Furthermore, it was also important for the SANDF that the SANDF should not be doing everything and should focus on certain activities and considerations should be given to the upfront funding of these activities. The issue of proper human capital management was also stressed. And the example used included the placing of people on long-term leave suspension with pay, where some of the periods extended 12 months at a very high cost to the Department of Defense that was raised by Dr. Kanile. The committee also noted consideration should be given to the suggestion.
Can you scroll down, please? Scroll down. You've stopped your scrolling. Right? Okay.
Right. Thanks, Gunther. Considerations should also be given to the suggestion that the DoD should develop and adopt a four-structure planning model with related indicators to follow whether the department is achieving these targets. Second from last, it was stressed that National Treasury's view that any proposed plan that does not deal decisively with the department's personnel headcount, force design, and conditions of service of the SANDF members is unlikely to succeed in assisting the department to operate within the compensation of employees' ceiling. It is in this context that the issues of force design and force structure should be considered. And the last observation, one of the main concerns regarding the substantial portion of the budget allocated to compensation of employees is that it crowds out other critical areas, and in the process, the SANDF stands to lose more and more defense capabilities, which will weaken the institution. Those observations can take us to the three key recommendations. Firstly, the committee planned a meeting with the chief of the SANDF to brief it on the force design and force structure in the fourth term program based on the various interactions to date. And as members are aware, that's happened in Pretoria. The second recommendation there The committee recognizes the urgency of addressing concerns around force design and force structure, specifically in the current fiscal environment. As such, there should be a follow-up discussion with the SANDF on the force design and force structure to facilitate agreement on the concept, the challenges, developing options on the way forward, this sector in the short, medium, and long-term objectives and timelines. And this would then relate to the upcoming meeting scheduled for the first meeting of next year. Lastly, Chair, the recommendation of the committee resolved to engage the department further on their plan and projections to sweat assets to assist with the funding of certain activities. Thank you, Chair. Those are the observations and recommendations.
Thank you so much. Colleagues, is there anything that you think is not fit to be added to be in this report, or that was incorrectly captured?
Chairperson, just from my side, I think it was correctly captured, and especially the observations is actually very good. There's nothing wrong with the three key recommendations, but I think if you look at the observations, there should be a number of additional recommendations following from the observations. And I think we must just make, because my biggest concern is we've had a wonderful day and wonderful session and great comments, and our observations are brilliant. But we must not only depend on the three that we have mentioned, because we know what happened in Pretoria. My experience from Pretoria was, listen, you know, we can't cut on cost of employees. So in other words, you know, we are stuck. But either we get the money or not, and there's not many alternatives that was placed on the table. And we know that, you know, if we stick to that, then National Treasury will not get closer, and we will not be able to deal with all these challenges as a committee and in terms of our observations. So somehow we must try to put more of those into detail recommendations by the committee in terms of how we will interact with that and what we will come up. Because, you know, if we only interact with the department and with the chief of the SNDF and SECDEF, you know, maybe we will just hear whatever we have heard in the past. We know that we cannot go that way. So I don't know how we're going to deal with that. I'll wait for your guidance on that. But somehow we must just make sure that this does not get stagnated again. And the next term, you know, we say, you know, we have still not moved forward.
Mr. Mahare, are you not confusing this minute, this report, with the report of the Lekhutla? This is a report on...
I know. No, I'm very much aware of that. Yes. And I don't want to preempt. I mean, at this stage, we know already what happened with the Lekhutla. We know what happened in terms of our interaction with force design and force structure. So all that I'm saying is that, you know, those three recommendations, key recommendations, is fantastic. But if you look at at our observations, I think there should be more, let's call it micro recommendations coming out, and not only this macro recommendations. The three is basically macro recommendations.
Yes, they are macro, Mr. Mahare, because remember, this was an information sharing session. Right.
I'm aware of that. I just don't want us to lose what we have observed there.
Let's go back to the observations. Check what in the observation must lift up to recommendations. All right. Let's look at your observations. Let's start with the first one. Is there anything we should move forward as a recommendation? And I think the first one is covered in the key solutions, right?
Yeah.
And then the second one, and I think that's a question whether the SNDF really needs the there is South African military health service as an independent. I want to leave it at that as an observation and not take it forward.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Because we have not canvassed it beyond this, right?
Yeah.
And then we go to the third paragraph. Although it was previously observed by the Minister of Defense that we should not have another defense review soon, the general view was that there needs to be an urgent engagement on how to take the defense force forward. Dr. Doc, what do you read of this? It's not covered by the in the three key recommendations.
Sorry, Chair, I just lost you there for a second. Which one are you referring to?
The third. We're looking at whether the third observation, the third point bullet under observation, needed to be is not covered by the three key recommendations below.
Chair, I think that one around urgent engagement, knowing what we know now, there has been further engagements already, and there's a planned engagement of, for the first meeting in January. So I think we've done justice to that in the sense that we've moved forward on it, and I think it should be covered by the three key overarching one. I think there are more specific ones below that Mr. Marie might refer to where we could have more specific recommendations.
No, it's fine. Let's look to the fourth paragraph. A suggestion was made that the GSCD needs to recommend to the ministry that the DOD should submit a memorandum to cabinet to obtain political clarity on what kind of SNDF we need and where such support will come from. I think this one will be covered in the Khutla, what you call recommendations. Am I wrong,
yes.
Colleagues?
Yeah, yeah.
We leave this as is, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
A concern was expressed that leaking of the 1998 defense review and even fewer of the 2015 defense review recommendations were implemented, and it was questioned whether it was an issue of non-implementation due to resource scarcity, or whether it was due to an unwillingness to implement. I think it's better we flag this just like this.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay.
I don't think we must recommend anything. It's good leaving it as a statement. Right? Let's move to the next paragraph. While there was agreement that certain members should exit the SNDF and that this should be done in a very humane way, question remained how exactly this should be done and where the funding for such exit mechanism would come from. I know these two also was a subject of discussion in the Khutla, and it continues to be a subject of our oversight, even post, before and post the Khutla. Do you want us to make any recommendation?
I think because in this is going to be one of the critical things going forward, is the strength of the SNDF and how we're going to fund the strength, but also the exit mechanisms. And I think there we need to do more modeling on our side and also interaction with National Treasury. Because we know that if they don't give us more money to exit employees, how are we going to do that? So you're going to have two poles that will never come together, and somehow we have to make it the recommendation of us on how to move forward on the whole issue of cost of employees.
I agree with you, Mr. Mare, but are we in a position to do so now?
Well, we can just make a recommendation in terms of what we must do going into the future, so that it is something that we are flagging in the recommendations, whether it is beginning of next year, Or what, but that is just something that we, through the recommendations, flag for us to either do a study or ask Wilhelm to do investigation or some research, him and Peter, for us, or that we interact with National Treasury. But it seems like, we cannot only wait for the department to say, no, we stick to our 75,000. Somehow we will have to apply our own minds in that as well and take some guidance and lead in that.
I think quickly, maybe along the lines that the COE continues to be, you know, I don't know. Are we saying something on COE? Can I look at the recommendations below? Let's go to the recommendation and check if there's any recommendation that talks to COE, compensation of employees. No, there's none. Yeah, I agree.
But in terms of the recommendations, we're basically saying, you know, the SNDF must tell us. And currently, we know what they will tell us. And that will not take us forward.
I think they must tell us how they are addressing the COE. The conflict of employees. I think let's leave that as a recommendation, because I'm already starting to look at it. You know, the HR kind of department.
And then
the rest is fine.
I just want to say in further of the observations that I've picked up, is all staff related and cost of the employees related and National Treasury related, because it seems like in terms of our second last one, you know, National Treasury. So and in terms of the force design, yes, it's and structure is in the recommendations, but our recommendations only refer to basically the SNDF that must tell us, and nowhere do we include National Treasury, for instance, and interactions, because somehow if we feel confident that we must stick to the 75,000, then we have to interact with National Treasury as well and put pressure on them, and that doesn't, I don't take that from the recommendation.
Mr. Marais, I think that if you look at the second paragraph, force design and force structure, I thought that specifically talks to the HR and other issues.
It only refers to follow up discussions with the SNDF. That's it.
Okay. All right. Willem and Peter, can you assist on this one? How do we bring that observation into the recommendation? That is the issue.
Yeah.
So that it's clear that we are also concerned about the compensation of employees and versus the ceiling placed on the Department of Defense by Treasury.
Yeah. My concern is we will get to next year's budget. And we will move no further, and we will see the cost of employees increase and the cut by the National Treasury further. And I mean, you know, we just cannot allow that.
Right. So we'll find one that would talk to that. I think the colleagues will craft it, and then I will send it to you for your comments before we incorporate it into the report. All right?
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Okay, fine. Let's leave it at that. We'll craft one, paragraph that speaks to that, and then I do a round robin on it. Okay, I'll leave it at that for now. Colleagues, thank you so much. Students, support the report with this amendment.
Absolutely, 100%. I so move.
It's moved by Mr. Marais, seconded by...
I second it.
Ms. Bucklet seconds it. Thank you so much. Let's go to the report on the Dihuta. Mr. Kunta? Yes,
sir. The presenters are ready now. The presenters.
Oh, the presenters are ready.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, let's suspend our discussion on the report. We've done the minutes, we've done the first report, and we're left with the two reports. Let's suspend the discussion on those, and then take and welcome the colleagues from the South African Unintegrated Forces United Front, and they wrote to the speaker basically saying that they were discriminated in 1995, and despite all efforts to bring their issue to the attention of the authorities, and nothing has happened, and no one has come back to them with the answer. And the speaker, upon receiving their memorandum stroke letter, she then referred that to us for processing. Processing means affording the colleagues from the South African Unintegrated Forces United Front to make a presentation to us and state their case. We will engage and with them, ask questions of clarity, discuss the presentation they are putting forward. And once we are done with that, we will then formulate our own opinion on the matter and then report to the speaker. Let me welcome the colleagues. I said at the beginning that they were not part of the meeting then. They were still experiencing some technical challenges. But in this age, this is how we meet. And there's technology that is able to bring people from all over the place, to be able to, talk amongst themselves. And right now, due to COVID, we are conducting a hybrid, what you call a meeting, a form of a meeting, where some members are in parliament, others are linked up from, via this platform, a virtual platform. And that works for us. And I'm sorry that we couldn't meet with you physically, but that's now the way of life. It looks as though this is how Parliament will work going forward. And at least it helps us to be able to meet people wherever they are through this platform. We welcome you as our guest and presenters today. You would indicate the people would be making a presentation, and then tell us who you are. And what we know so far is that you are ex-SADF members and ex-KwaZulu-Natal self-protection unit members who think they have a claim to integration, but they were not integrated, given that by then, I think they say because they were discriminated. They'll tell us how they were discriminated, that they could not be integrated into the process. So I can see David Collins. David Collins, I don't know if it is him who's going to take us through the presentation. But let me welcome you, colleagues, and you may then introduce yourself and then launch into the presentation. Over to you, colleagues. My name is Phil Chaba. I'm the chairman of the committee.
Evening, the owners, and then evening, the leaders. As it has been indicated, my name is David Collins. I'm a former member of South African Defence Force, who were not integrated during the 1994 integration. Based on the concern raised and the document that has been provided and supplied, I believe that you can see the kind of communication and efforts that we made since 1995 to date. And then you could see how disappointed we have been. We have been ignored, we have been undermined, we have been disregarded, even though regardless of the efforts that we made to communicate with our leaders. Summarily, let me take us back to who we are and where we are coming from. In the first place, yes, we are part and parcel of the people who protected the country during that time. We are part and parcel of the people who voted for the current for the government. And then we are also members of different political parties in South Africa. But nevertheless, none of our leaders have made effort to listen to us. Point that we would like to fix to stay on is the issue of integration. We are so surprised to hear that we were not integrated, based on the fact that we don't know the criteria that has been used to integrate all other members that are in the South African National Defence Force for now. We don't know where does that come from and what was the criteria.
You are muted.
I think it's muted.
Yeah, it's because it's on the, it's on the system. You have muted yourself, Mr. Collins. Mr. Collins, we have lost you.
Yes.
I think there's a reception, there's a network problem. And there's a network problem. And we have lost him completely. We've lost him completely. He's not on the screen. Not on the screen yet. All right. So let's, colleagues, please, let's bear with them. I'm sure they've a network problem. And I think they are experiencing what Honorable Lekwase used to experience. Lekwase, are you okay there?
Yes, I am fine, Chair.
All right, good.
Okay.
Yes, sir. Yes, Tabo.
It's more or less the same situation with the Quasars. Remember the first meeting we were supposed to have with them.
Guys, you are back, huh?
Yeah.
We are back. Let me be honest.
All right, Tabo.
Okay. We are back.
Okay,
I'm back,
right.
The honor. This is the indication of what we...
Okay. We're actually saying you don't know what criteria was used. Okay, continue from there. I can see you, Mr. Collins.
Yeah,
continue.
I believe that we are all aware of the
Okay, can you do this? Collins, do this. Switch off your video. We can't hear you. And switch off your video. Your sound quality will be bad.
Yeah, like this.
I'm saying switch
yes,
off your video. Mr. Collins, switch off your video, then the sound quality will be better.
Okay. Can you hear me now?
No, I must not see you.
Yes, sir.
Switch off. No. I'm asking you to switch off your video. Right. Then you can talk. Well, he just disappears. When you ask him to switch off the video and then... the system kicks him out completely. All right. So it does not look like we are making any headway. Chabo, you were still explaining that it's the same experience that the Khoisan.
Yeah, remember they struggled with locking in, and it was a bit of a challenge, a technological challenge as well.
Yeah, no, it's true.
speak, you're back now.
Now you are okay now. Just keep it that way. You can talk. Keep it that way. Don't open the video. Keep it that way.
Okay, as I was indicated, guys, this is another challenge that we are having. That we
guys,
requested that...
Sorry, not guys.
Okay,
not
my,
guys.
My apology, the owner.
Thank you.
My apology, the owner. I say
that's
this is a challenge
said.
That... This is the challenge that we are having in terms of facility. That is what we requested. Then, in terms of the Labor Relations Act, there should be a consultation process that should be taken with reason given. A written reason should be given what is the reason why the dismissal has to take place. And the point number two is the criteria that is going to be used to dismiss those people. Most unfortunately to us, we do have people that were retained in the South African Defence Force. We have people who were dismissed, but we don't know what was the criteria that was used to select those people. Similar to the point of other formations, we don't know that what is the criteria that was used to integrate those other forces into the South African National Defence Force. The point there is to indicate whereby we were unfairly discriminated. Because of we should have at least been provided with reasons. Written reasons according to the Labor Relations Act. And the other point is we should have at least given the opportunity to be represented. If we don't have the union like by that time, we should have at least have a workers' forum, which was not there. That is the reason why we are saying we have been unfairly treated. And then it carries on. But the other point that I could raise just to summarize our concern is fraud and corruption. We are quietly aware according to the report that has been submitted, that yes, there were people that were demobilized. There were people who received the special pension. Some of them are supposed to pay back the money that were awarded to them. Unfortunately, when looking into us in terms of pensions, we are aware that there were certain other forces that were granted the DEF pension. But unfortunately, to the former South African Defence Force members, we got only the salary of that month. You understand? That is the reason why we pursued our leaders to say, can we sit down and talk about this? But none of our leaders, people who we voted, people who we secured during the riot, people who we protected, unfortunately, none of them seems to take care of us or to listen, to give us a chance to present our complaints. When looking into our memorandum that has been submitted, it's so long. And since 1995 to date, plus minus 25 years, none of our government officials are prepared to listen to us up until today. Today we have been given an opportunity, but unfortunately due to lack of facilities, we cannot present our case properly. But I believe based on points that I have mentioned here, integration and unfairly discrimination, fraud and corruption, we've got some points that we can speak to it and decide. I thank you. Probably, I think that is basically the summary of our concern.
Thank you so much, Mr. Collins. How were you dismissed? What form did it take? When were you dismissed, and how were you dismissed?
Well, as indicated, I was dismissed 1995. Immediately after the elections, after all the dust has settled, this is where now we were dismissed without any further consultation, without knowing the reason, without knowing any criteria that is going to be used. We don't know if the people who were retained, was it because of their age, was it because of their conduct, or was it because of their qualifications? That is our point of concern.
Were you on contract? Maybe let's talk about yourself. When you joined, when did you join the SADF? And then what was the agreement? The nature of was it? Were you on contract or you were on employed on permanent basis?
I was on contract, but if you can go through the final report, it indicated that the contract was much as the permanent employees, because of it was always renewed. Then we have been regarded as a permanent employee. You can go through it into the financial report.
How long was your contract? Let's talk about yourself so that we get a sense of the people who were dismissed at that time. And when were you employed on contract, and how long was the contract? Mr. Collins? Mr. Collins? Mr. Collins? Mr. Collins? Can you unmute your system, Mr. Collins? Mr. Collins?
Yes, Honor, we are having a challenge, technical problems here.
Okay.
Yes,
now,
Your Honor?
Before, the question I was actually asking, we are trying to see the nature of the problem through your own circumstances. I'm asking, when were you employed as a soldier? And what unit did you belong to? What was your prefix? And what was the nature of your contract? How long your contract was?
Well, personally, I was employed in the defense in 1992, and
right.
Then I was serving 2-year contract, and the prefix was PY.
All right, 1992, and your contract was for 2 years, a 2-year
contract. Yeah.
And then your prefix was was PY.
PY.
PY. PY.
Yes, PY.
All right. So when the contract ended, is that when you got dismissed?
Yes. Yes.
In other words, you served out the whole 2 years. You served out the whole term of the contract.
Yes, Your Honor.
All right. So at the point, the integration took place when you already left, when you already exited the system, when your contract had already expired.
No.
Right.
Integration Integration took place from 1993.
Right. And you're still serving out your contract.
I was still in the contract.
Sure. Okay.
We were still in the contract by that time. All the formations, non-statutory forces, for them to go through training, they go training through us. That is where now, after everything has settled now, they know all the procedures and everything. That is where now the government decided to dismiss us.
No, now we know who the circumstances under which you were released from the SATF. Colleagues, the matter is now on the table.
Chair?
Yes, Mr. Kwasi?
I also want to get this clear. Is Mr. Collins saying he was dismissed or the contract came to an end? Because you asked him two questions and he said to you, he served the 2 years and then the contract came to an end. And then again, he's saying he was not integrated. Secondly, he is saying to us that he will not be able to make a full submission. He'll only give us a summary. So I want to ask him if we will be doing justice to handle his issue based on the summary that he's giving us, while he's not giving us everything that he had to submit. Thank you,
Chair. Yes, Mr. Collins. Thank you so much, Mr. Kwase. Mr. Collins?
Thank you, the Honor. I like the question. What we said, we have been dismissed, unfairly dismissed. Based on the point that I have indicated earlier, that, yes, according to the Labor Relations Act, consultation is supposed to be made. The criteria that was going to be used should be clearly stated in a written form, and the reasons should be provided. And then we are also supposed to have representation. As I, the last point was, yes, the integration started 1993 before the contract could be ended.
All right. Okay. Any other question, colleague?
Chairperson, can I just question ask from my side? Was there any promises made or undertakings given at the time when the training was taking place of the non-statutory forces members, and were there any expectations created that they will be integrated? Because obviously, I think the one thing that we are sitting with is, on the one side, there's been clearly a contractual, there was a contractual agreement, although it was in the, if prior to that date, was renewed from time to time, but you still sit with a situation where the contract came to an end. So that is a legal relationship. And if there are not binding and kind of a commitment, or even if it's a verbal commitment, that you guys will be integrated or at least considered for integration, then we can start to work with something, because I think that if we go down the route of saying it was unfairly, then obviously you must go back and look at the legislation at the time, and then obviously that is a different story, and then we have to go into that avenue. So I just wanted to more understand whether there was any expectations created, that you guys would have been integrated at the time when your contract was running out. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Honor Mare. And before I invite Mr. Collins to respond, may I... you have your hands up. Okay. All right. Okay. Colleagues, I want to take a question at a time so that we get to understand exactly their thinking. And instead of taking a batch of them. And Mr. Marais asked the question. I'm going to invite them back on the platform to reply. Velen. And Peter, and I grant you, you can also ask questions as well in this arrangement. All right. Can you respond, Mr. Collins, to Mr. Mare's question? Was any promise made or undertaken? Was any promise made or expectations created that your term will be extended beyond the term of 2 years? If yes, for how long, and so on. It's now up on you to ask. Mr. Collins? They've disappeared. They've disappeared. Oh, you are back now. Mr. Collins, are you back? I think they have serious challenges with their network, and we can't hear their case. Anyway. I can recognize the head of RIDA, my co-chair, Alec. Martha's hand is also up, and Thabo Motle's hand is also up. Yes, right, I saw it. Mr. Collins, are you back? Yes, right, I saw it, yes. Mr. Collins, are you back?
He's not back, Chair. I don't think this is working. You really have a problem.
Yeah, it's not working, eh?
No.
All right. Colleagues,
they are kicked out of the meeting, Chair. I don't see them here anymore.
Yeah, all right. Colleagues, let's discuss it. Now I can take a batch of questions. I'll start with you, Alec, Chabeleng, and then go to Ryder, and then Mutle, and then Bartlett, and then Motiva. Honorable Chabeleng, my co-chair.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Chairperson. Honorable Lewis actually asked me many of the questions that I wanted to ask. But the other thing I'd like to know is what was the balance of the contract when it was terminated? And and based on whatever question will be, were they compensated for the remainder of the contract? There's something that is called a payment in lieu of notice, you know. It works mostly in labor relations. I'm not sure if the AMIS it runs through the same act. I'm not quite sure. So that is what I want to stop with. What was the balance of the contract simulation?
Mr. Chabeleng, this is what he said. He said he was employed in 1992. From 1992 to 1994, and he was in a two-year contract. So he served out his term. Maybe we still pose that question, at least for other members of his organization. And Tim, Peter, can you make note of this question that Chabeleng raised? That even though he has answered it, maybe other members of his team may be able to answer the question. And then let's go to Mr. Martha Patlet.
Yeah, just a little bit, Chairperson. My understanding is that if your contract lapses, then you have there's no contractual obligation between you and your employer. Because the argument was that it will take 24 months. So after 24 months, if you are called back, you're very lucky. And if you are not, it's still okay because your term has lapsed. You know. Otherwise, anybody who is doing contract work in the country will say that, you know, if you appoint me as a contractor, then I become permanent. You cannot terminate the contract. I'm just saying that, we have a legal team of parliament. They need also to give us an advice on a matter like this one. You know? If, for instance, whatever falls off, then what will be the next step that they'll have to take? Then the matters will be go to the Constitutional Court and challenge it.
Okay. Now, thank you so much for that. Are you done, Chairman? Okay.
No, yes, I'm done.
Mr. Reiter, thank you so much. Mr. Reiter, and then after Reiter, I'll go to Madrid. Mr. Reiter.
Okay, thank you, Chief. Yeah, thanks very much. Look, I think it should be a fairly simple question. And I think Mr. Murray and Mr. Chabeleng have both, got to the heart of this particular problem. And the fact is that there was a contract in place. The contract ended. In terms of the law at the time, that was where things ended. Now, Chairperson, I have just in the last 5 minutes turned around here in my office and gone through my paperwork. And so I finished with the South African Defence Force in 1991. Was when my service terminated with him. They issued me with that certificate on termination. And, you know, that was one thing that was always in order. The paperwork was always there. And there's a certificate, and it says exactly the details and gives the details of when I was released, etc. So the question...
Sorry, you are breaking, Mr. Ryder. You are making a...
Let him switch off the camera.
Switch off the camera, Mr. Ryder. Yes.
Thank you, pardon.
Okay, now come back.
Thank you. Yes.
So you're saying the certificate would give all the details, including the reason for termination.
Absolutely. There must be some sort of paperwork. I mean, I certainly wouldn't leave any job without some piece of paper to say, you know, you're out or whatever. There must be some clarity. So what documentation was given? And that will certainly help us. Now, it's not my recollection that integration started in 1993 already, but, you know, fair enough. I just feel that if we could get a force number, he didn't answer your question as to what unit he was assigned to. And there are some probing questions that we could get some background from the gentleman if only we had an opportunity to get a decent connection.
Mr. Ryder, can you assist us with the questions that would give us the whole picture? Is the force number, the unit?
Force number,
and
the unit that he was assigned to. And then what documentation was given when he finished?
Okay, that's fine. Thank you so much. I think that helps when we write back to them. All right, and Martha Bartlett.
Yes, I really don't know whether they are for us to ask these questions while Mr. Collins is not, unless he's represented by the other team, because I didn't understand the whole scenario. We actually want him to represent the team and speak about the team, but now he spoke about himself. And I think it was better for us also to have a meeting after this. But then we must get all the documents and all the things that he said that I'm having, because really now I don't understand the whole scenario. Thanks, Chair.
Okay. No,
it's not
so
that
much.
You say you don't want to entertain it, but I mean when we have clarity on all the issues.
Okay.
Thanks,
Ms. Bartlett. Thank you so much. Thabo, Honorable Thabo Motle.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. It's unfortunate that they are no longer in the meeting. I just wanted to get clarity when he said seemingly they are not getting any kind of assistance with regard to these issues that they are raising. And he further said they were protecting people. I'm not sure who was he referring to, as we all know that the South African Defence Force never protected our people. But my question, Chair, was with regard to their first demand of integration. I wanted to find out from them as to where were they during the integration process. If they were there, what step have they taken? What have they done basically to ensure that they are not overtaken by events? And why are they now raising these issues with us now? If they did have an opportunity to engage with that process then. But unfortunately, they are not here to respond. So I will just pause there.
Okay. No, thank you very much, Honorable Modise.
Thank you so much, Ken. With regards to the contract, I would have also wanted to say in the Defence Force, even with the previous staff, there has never been permanent contracts for forces. What happens is that the first 2 years of the contract is actually for training. Thereafter, you are offered continuous contract, which is what happened in the SADF, and it continues to happen currently in the SANDF. Therefore, the 2 years that he speaks of where he says he was employed, it could have been the first 2 years of training in the military. Secondly, I think what we also need to look at is the laws that would have taken place during the integration. We also need to then be assisted with it that where the members, as he's complaining, that they were dismissed and were not taken through the integration, did they comply and did they qualify with the regulations of what was required at that particular time when integration was taking place? I think here we need not be general about these issues. We need then to be able to look into the law, apply our minds into it, and I think that will assist us moving forward. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you so much, Honourable Motise. And Honourable Shelembe.
Yes, sir. Chairperson, my concern is what they have raised, that they were not informed of the reasons why they were, dismissed. So now maybe we need to look at that as a point that at that time, were they informed of, of their dismissal? And they also raised the issue that because they were not sort of, the unions or something. I think if, they were not informed of the reason, I think we owe them an explanation why they were not, informed of their dismissal. If maybe you can look at that and then clarify it and respond back to them to say, okay, you were informed if they were informed. If they were not informed, we need to ask ourselves why they were not informed. Because the more they speak, they say it was unfair.
We have lost you, Dr.
How they have been informed. Hello?
Yes, we have lost you. Yes.
You must go to the mountains again.
Yeah, it will help you.
Can you hear me?
Yes,
can you hear me now?
Yeah, now it's fine. All right. You can talk. The quality sound is okay now.
Yeah. Yeah. So, Chairperson, I want to emphasize on what they were saying, that they were not informed as to why they were not integrated. So it's like they want the reason why they were not integrated. Maybe as a committee, we look at that and see, look at back whether they were informed or they were not informed. If they are telling the truth that they were not informed, I think we need now to do something. We owe them an answer, to say, yes, we are not informed. These are the reasons you are not informed. Let's look at that, the issue of not being informed of their dismissal, and then how they were selected to be not integrated to the system. Thank you.
All right. Okay. Colleagues, let me just check if, I think we have covered all colleagues, all hands that were up. So what we'll do, we'll prepare a set of questions that we'll send them to the team, so that when we meet with them, they come and deal with those questions and the questions that would arise on the day. But I agree with you that these questions that we have posed will certainly give light to the people and will help us make a decision on the way forward. So let's leave it at that for now and until further notice. It means that they will not be able to meet with these guys, with these colleagues, with these ex-soldiers at any time between now and the end of the year, because I think this is the last meeting of this of the Joint Standing Committee. All right, so let's leave it at that for now. But in between, we'll be exchanging emails. I'll also ask them to give us a list of their members and their force numbers, their ID numbers, and their prefix, and whether they were on contract or not. If on contract, how long was the contract? And what was the start date and the end date? And so that at least on paper, we get to see
the nature of relationship that each one of them had with the South African Defence Force at the time, and whether, given that there was any expectation that after a two-year period or whatever period they served, they would then be employed on a permanent basis. But I know that it's never automatic that after serving a two-year period, you get employment on a permanent basis. It's based on your performance and, you know, and your conduct at work that you are given a post, you get absorbed on a permanent basis. It's never automatic. And so I think their case for now, in my view, I've not looked at the issues, you know, closely. It's similar to the case that the Khoisans raised. The Khoisans were actually, some members had a stint between 79 and 81. But they say they were not, they exited in 1981, but they still think they have a claim, you know, and so the determining factor here, what was the nature of your employment relationship with the employer at that time? Because it then tells us your how you exit the system. Exited on the expiry, or you are permanent and you exit upon being fired or retired, or when you're deceased and all that. So leave it at that for now. At least this gives us a good way of collecting the data that the colleagues are looking for. Let's leave it at that, colleagues, for now. And we apologize that we couldn't take it any further than this. Let's go back, colleagues, to our report. Peter, do you want to say something, Velen? Any observation you want to make before we move?
Okay, I think in your summary, you have captured what I think we should actually request from them. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you so much, Velen.
Chair, same from my side. I did some quick reading, and it seems like the contract issue around the integration period was the main issue for exclusion, as you mentioned, also with the Khoisan group. So if they can get clarity, as per the questions that were posed, if we can get clarity on that, that'll be great. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Okay, we'll leave it at that for now. All right, let's take us through the report of the Lekhotla, of the Joint Standing Committee on Defense with the Department of Defense and the SADF on the 16th and 17th. All right, let's go down. The aim of the Lekhotla. Okay, let's look at the aim. The primary aim of the Lekhotla was to initiate a discussion that will result in the development of an implementable, reliable action plan to bring about a defense force structure that is sustainable, commensurate to the threat perception, and fiscally appropriate. So we're initiating that discussion with them, but we were not developing the plan. They were doing it, but we wanted them to start to look in this direction. All right? And the committee members and staff at the Lekhotla, these are the committees. Let's look at the members so that we check if all members were there. Because this report will go to Parliament. Colleagues, this is the list of the attendance list. All right. Okay. Scroll down. This is support staff. Attendance list. This is the attendance list of the departmental officials, the minister, the deputy minister. All right. And then this is a program of the day. And then the opening remarks by Mr. Kaba. Not V, only VC Kaba, right? Correct that. Okay, so, all right, and then you go down. Opening remarks by the minister. Opening remarks by the chief of the South African Defence Force. Presentation by the ministerial and on the ministerial priorities and the chief MTF priorities, all right, presentation on the force structure and the force design. Go down. Presentation on the Minister of Defense and Military Veterans priorities and the CN Chief of the Defense Focus Areas. All right, go down. Remarks by the Deputy Minister. Hey, let's see what the Deputy Minister says here. What do you say on his remarks? The Deputy Minister was invited to make a remark and indicated his understanding of the role and the role of Parliament given the separation of powers. A doctrine members engaged him on his views, and it was agreed that each arm has its own responsibility should be respected. The minister interpreted the deputy's minister's views as representing the frustration of the generals and indicated that the sector had some proposals on how the SNDF can become more self-sustainable. It was agreed that a new defense review is too expensive and would take too long, and thus an alternative mechanism should be sought on how to address some of the challenges in the DoD. Okay? All right. Summary of the chief of the SNDF, closing remarks by the minister, right? And then the observations. Can you take us through the observations?
Yes, thank you, Chair. It was on the 16th. First, the committee raised concerns around the budget cuts and noted the reasons given for it, especially that various attempts have been made by the minister and the chief to engage National Treasury and the Commander-in-Chief, Mr. President, in this regard, without any success. As you will recall, they've mentioned the various meetings they had with the President. Secondly, the committee noted the deliberations to find sustainable solutions to the challenges of the SNDF and suggested that the department goes back to prepare a response to the documents tabled by the committee, with particular focus on the possible outcomes proposed for the Lakotla. Thirdly, it was observed that little mention was made of the role of corruption in the DoD itself and how this can impede the effective implementation of the department and the SNDF's goals and objectives. It was stressed that the department should pay more attention to gender equality in the senior leadership of the Defence Force and that a committee expects progress to be made in this regard. In the first place, one of the key observations related to the fact that there is a dire need for the budget to be prioritized in such a manner that it can ensure that the SNDF stands ever ready to defend the country against the threats as outlined in the presentation and other analysis. It was suggested that a coordinated presentation by the different stakeholders in the security cluster should be presented to the President and Cabinet in order to emphasize under decision makers that there is a dire need for political support from the highest echelons to address the security issues in the country, especially as it relates to the challenges facing the SNDF. If, while expressing frustration at the budget constraints and reflecting on the mandate of SNDF to be able to protect, expressing frustration at the budget constraint and reflecting on the mandate of the SNDF to be able to protect against security threats, members also focus on the need for sustainable SNDF. Members therefore urge further discussions on exactly what capacity the SNDF require, what can be cut, and at what cost. G, in addition to the concerns around the budget, members also express the need for the DoD to look internally to see what steps it can take to save money and improve the financial position. The DoD was encouraged to remain frugal with its spending. H. The committee agreed with the assertions by the minister and the chief regarding the state of the NEL and its impact on the SNDF and the broader defense industry. They stated that this issue should also be escalated to the highest level. The committee also agreed that the position must be taken that there is a need to salvage the special defense account, given its centrality to acquire prime mission equipment, as the majority of the current PME is outdated and has become obsolete. In order to assist with the rejuvenation of the SNDF, consideration should be given on crafting new and focused recruitment strategies for SNDF, and that new networks can possibly be established and relations can be built with, for instance, municipalities to assist in this regard. Members also raised questions around the progress on the force, on the new force structure, as it was recently approved by the Military Command Council and will soon be presented to Cabinet. The committee requested to be kept abreast of developments in this regard and urged finalization of the process. Peter, please. L. Members expressed concern around mission creep for the SANDF and stated that a number of security threats noted by the SANDF during its presentation were not necessarily primary defense functions. As such, this should be addressed through enhanced interdepartmental cooperation. Members also agreed with the presentation that revenue generation by the DoD can assist in boosting its current limited budget. The last one there, the committee noted its outstanding engagement with the chief of the human resources and agreed to follow up on this with a focus on force structure and aspects related to compensation of employees in the department. As we are aware, that meeting was also then later on postponed. 12, just the observations of the committee at the next day, the Saturday morning, where the committee was just gathered on its own. The first point there, the chairperson expressed his appreciation for an opportunity to engage with the top leadership of the SANDF and noted that the majority of the military command was present. Members commended the Lakotla as they could raise issues of concern directly with the senior leadership of the SANDF. The committee expressed its concern around apparent stalemate between the DoD and National Treasury to resolve the funding of the COE and providing funding to prime mission equipment, especially as it relates to Project Biro, Hotel, and Hoefeister. C. Concern was expressed on the absence of consensus between the DoD and National Treasury on the rejuvenation plan and its funding. The committee highlighted that this has implications for the SANDF succession planning, its ability to attract, retain, and mentor the youth, and to rejuvenate the defense force. And indeed, the committee noted that in the context of concerns around human resources matters, the issue of compensation of employees and related illegal expenditure in this regard should be resolved as a matter of urgency. And the E, concern was expressed that the DoD has not seriously engaged with the proposal to address its challenges, such as the possible incorporation of military hospital with the National Department of Health, resuscitating the member exit mechanism, the MEM, increased use of the MSDS members, addressing rank inflation, and addressing supernumeraries, etc. If the committee noted the need for improved succession planning in the SANDF. And G, the committee suggested that it needs to refocus its efforts to assist in resolving the funding challenges of the DoD. Various options were discussed, which included a cabinet memorandum by the minister, a meeting with the commander-in-chief, as well as engaging the parliamentary budget office in this regard. And in H, the sentiment was that the SAND feels that their concerns are not really being accommodated, especially where they differ with National Treasury on how to manage the allocated funds. And given that this has been an oncoming for some time, the impression was gained that the top leadership is exasperated with the political leadership, as they felt that issues are not being viewed from their perspective. And I, it was emphasized that going forward, the committee should take note of the listed threat analysis as presented by the DoD when discussing the way forward with the Defense Force, specifically in terms of the force armaments needs. And then J, the committee felt that whenever possible, it should participate and or contribute to efforts to rescue the NEL as its demise would impact massively on the SANDF. Then the last one, the committee undertook to investigate the issues around the SDA with a view to ensure its continuation, given its central role to acquire PME. This against the background that a majority of the SANDF's military hardware is nearing obsolescence. In paragraph 13, these are some of the recommendations that we derive. The first one there, the committee resolved that an investigation into the armament situation in the SANDF should be launched by the Joint Standing Committee on Defence, and that the subsequent report can serve as a justification to engage the Commander-in-Chief. B. The committee recommended that the issue of the SDA should be taken up with National Treasury, given its centrality to acquire PME, and against the background of possible cancellation penalties, which might be quite substantial. A reference was also made to especially the funding of Project Biro Hotel and to a lesser extent Project Hoefeister. It was agreed that once Cabinet has agreed with the force design and force structure, the department should alert the committee in order to arrange for the department to present the approved force design and force structure to this committee. And indeed, it was requested that the department should provide it with a report on the legislative impediments to the execution of its mandate. Then E, the committee recommended that the department should enhance its efforts to source alternative revenue, and in addition to the proposal shared with the Joint Committee on Defence, it should consider allowing the Defence Force World Formation to assist with repair and maintenance of facilities of other government departments at a cost. And the last one, the committee recommended renewed engagement between the DoD and National Treasury under the Rejuvenation Plan and its funding to ensure force sustainability, and that two departments should report back to Parliament on progress in this regard. That is the observations and the recommendations.
Disappeared.
Chairperson disappeared.
Yeah.
But he is still in the meeting.
He'll join us on the way. Where were we now in terms of the program?
The recommendations, point 13.
Recommendations, point 13.
Of the Lafort Labs program, HADRA report.
All right, I don't know.
Okay, Honorable Mutley, are you going to take chair for the moment?
No, I'm still in the meeting.
Sorry, Chair.
And also, Honorable Chagale, the floor chair is in the
meeting. No, colleagues, I was muted. I'm sorry, I did not realize that.
Okay.
So we have taken. Let's go back to observations and see if they, the team has captured the observations correctly. All right, number 11. Don't. Where are you? Observations number 11. Right. Observations on the day on 16th. October?
Chairperson, there are the observations that I pick up that was not captured from the discussions, and that is two things. That is the points where we raised with, first of all, with regards to Project Biro and Hotel, and that must hopefully come into the recommendations as well, where I specifically asked the CFO of DOD whether we have got funding. They have got funding to pay for Biro and Hotel because we know that those Hotel is finished, it's nearly finishing, and Biro is very close to delivering the first inshore patrol vessel. And he at that stage said there was no funding available, and then we said that we will have to engage with Arms Corps on whether they have got funding in reserve for that project.
Mr. Murray, why are we singling those two or three out? Because we're discussing them in the context of armaments, stroke, prime mission equipment in general.
Yeah, but I think that this was just very much, and I think because why I'm raising that in the recommendations, the second recommendations, it refers to that. And because my recommendation would have been a recommendation that we must engage with Arms Corps with regard to the funding.
because that was just part of the observation that was mentioned specifically. Now, whether we change the observation, because it's in the observation, and we can just add that maybe to the recommendation.
Mr. Marais, I think the point here is that, you see, the special defense account, it's money that AMSCO was utilizing to finance all the acquisitions, including repairs and maintenance. I was making a point in this report that if there is no allocation made to the special defense accounts, then that poses a threat to the equipment that some of which are now starting to be obsolete. I think the point is being made.
Yeah, yes, but just to remember that SDA is with Department of Defense. And then they transfer money to Arms Corps, who is the acquisition.
No, they don't. No, they don't. There's no transfer. Apparently, there's an arrangement that Arms Corps can transact from the special defense accounts. There's no transfer.
Because then we've got a major problem.
No. That's the point. There's also, remember, by law, we have to Parliament appropriates money.
Yeah.
The limit that a department could transfer to any outside body.
Yeah.
It's up to 100,000 rand. Anything above 100,000 rand must be sanctioned by Parliament. So that's the reason why I know that there will be no money that comes out of Parliament, out of the budget, without us approving it.
Okay.
All right. What is on the special defense account is what is available, or what would be available to both the defense force and arms. So there will be an arrangement as to how that account is operated between the two of them. That's how they were operating.
Okay. Let's leave it there. But I think we know that we've got a major problem then.
I agree with you. Let's go to A. And I don't want my principals to say that, especially the commander-in-chief, to say that the attempts to engage with him did not bear any success. They find a way of formulating that without making that explicit.
More diplomatic.
Yeah, we need to be more diplomatic about it, yeah.
Whoever wrote the deputy minister is very diplomatic. They should just change this one.
Yeah. All right. And then, okay. So, colleagues, are you any other observation you are making on these observations?
I think the observations are brilliant.
Are brilliant. Okay.
Just a few things.
Yes, Mojita? Shelembe? Is your hand up?
Chairperson, just another observation, and I'm not quite sure whether it must be in the observations or whether we must just have a recommendation with that. The minister has made reference to that the Secretary of Defense has got proposals on how the SNDF can become more self-sustainable. So I don't see that in the observations, but I mean, even if we leave it out, hopefully we will put it into the recommendations that we have to interact with the SECDEF on her proposals on how to make the SNDF
self-sustainable. All right.
But that was quite important to me.
Yes, no. It was that they were looking at alternative, streams of revenue.
Yeah, and also, I got the impression that the new broom is sweeping.
Yeah, no, it's fine. We'll make a note on that observation. Colleagues, are we done with the observation on of the 16th of October?
Uh,
Chairperson, I have lowered my hand. I've already lowered my hand.
Yes, let me just check if Modise's hand was up. It's been lowered now. All right. Okay, colleagues, let's go to the next set of observations on the 17th. Let's go finish them. Finish them. Right. Let's finish observations on this meeting. Colleagues, all right. Any other comments? Calm down. Observations of the 16th. Scroll down. Colin, can you switch off your mic, please? We'll come back to you. We can see that you are back.
Yes, sir, we are back.
Yeah, just switch off your mic, please, so that we have to finish this meeting first. Just switch off your mic. All right, colleagues, the observations of the 12th, sorry, of the 17th, go back, go down. All right, colleagues, is there anything you want to comment on here? Okay, on E, concerns of the press that the DOD has not seriously engaged with the proposal to address the challenges, such as the possible incorporation of military hospitals within the National Department of Health, resuscitating the members' exit mechanism, increased utilization of MSDS, addressing rank inflation, and addressing supernumeraries. I don't think the issue of incorporation of the hospitals, of the military hospitals within the Department of Health was canvassed thoroughly to make us understand exactly what would this achieve. But we know about the exit mechanism. We know about MSDS issues. We know about, we've been told, informed about rank inflation, even though they said there's no such. And we also know that there's supernumeraries. Those are the statements of facts. But I'm not quite certain about the incorporation of the military hospitals, if we want to include that in the same paragraph.
I can just make it a separate point.
Yeah, we can make it a separate point, but put it differently.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. And then that was my... Okay. So I'm done with my observation for my part. Any other thing, colleagues? Any other comments on the observations?
Nothing,
sir. All right. Let's go to recommendations.
Chairperson, the recommendations are fine. I've just got two points, and I'm not sure whether, you know, how we should put those into the recommendations. The one was that we must interact with the Secretary of Defense or request the Secretary of Defense to, to brief us on her proposals on how the SANDF can become more self-sustainable. That was the one. And the other one that I've just picked up, I think in the previous minutes we have also touched on the defense review, and that was the comment that the deputy minister made, that the defense review is too expensive and would take too long, thus an alternative mechanism should be sought on how to address the challenges in the DoD. So if the defense review is too expensive, and we all know that the 2015 defense review was too expensive, so either the deputy minister or the Secretary of Defense or anybody or someone else or the minister must then at one stage come and say, you know, is this a valid observation that was made? If it is, what are the alternative mechanisms, you know, that we should then look at? Because that was a comment that was made, and I just felt that we cannot just leave it there, just hanging, and somewhere someone must come and tell us, okay, if this is the case, what is the alternatives?
No, go back to C, Marae. It addresses that point. We're saying it was agreed that once cabinet has agreed with the force design and the force structure, the department should alert the JSCD in order to arrange for the department to present the approved force design and force structure to the committee. Yeah.
Okay.
I think the issue is still within, still under our radar. It's not escaping us. They are still going to come back to us.
But on the subject, coming back on sustainable sustainability programs,
yeah.
If we can include that as a recommendation.
Yeah, I would love to hear a suggestion.
Okay.
Thank you
so much. And on the committee resolved that an investigation into the armament situation, and I think that's, can you, instead of armament situation, a person who reads this without having gone through the observations and the whole context may not get a sense of what we are trying to say.
Yeah.
Can we unpack that a little more?
Yeah. And whether we must refer to armaments or munitions, what is the right terminologies to use?
And what is the right terminology? Armaments or ammunition? I don't know what's the right terminology. But I remember us discussing that we should, so that we go back and make a recommendation to the powers that be. Even if we say, okay, don't make, in the special defense accounts, allocate ring fence money for this project, and that project. You know? And at least we'll be talking something that they would understand. And I think that was the idea of why we need to launch an investigation, so that we are able to come back with a recommendation that would make them see the need why they must fund at least projects rather than just give a blank check.
Yeah.
All right. Any other thing, colleagues? I don't see the hands. All right.
If there are no answer, then I propose for the acceptance.
Acceptance is proposed. Any second?
Chair, I don't know where the other members, but it seems that we are the only ones to second, but I second then. I hope it'll not be a problem
all
in
right.
the minute.
Okay, no, that's fine. Thank you very much. Mata is seconded. All right. Colleagues?
Honorable Mata must not be tired of the country.
You are
no,
correct.
I'm not
or
saying,
no, but
what I'm saying, I don't want it to be a problem in a minute.
No, you are not. All right, colleagues, we are done with this report. And let's go back to our colleagues. And we have until a half past eight. So now it's 6 minutes to eight. Mr. Collins?
Yes, sir.
Yes. Can you unmute your mic?
Yes, sir.
Yes.
I did.
Okay. Okay. What we have agreed, because you disappeared, and is that we'll write you and request, we'll write to you and request certain information per member. Right, and the fourth number, the name, in other words, the name and the surname, ID number, and the prefix number, and the fourth number, and the unit to which a member was assigned to, the nature of the contract, and the head with the employer. The term of the contract and the reasons for termination of exiting from the employment of the employee. So write to you to ask you to supply us with that information now per member. There was a question that one member raised that part of your comments. You said some members were providing assistance such as protecting certain personnel, and but he was puzzled, and so is I, that
that's not a responsibility of a soldier to provide a VIP protection. Why you mentioned that? And then the last point is that members who exited were given a certificate. All right, and the certificate will give you all the information, including the contract period, and the reason for exiting the institution, right? And so would want all of that information in a table form per member. How many members do we have?
Mr. Collins is gone, Chair. He's not here.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay, we are done. But colleagues, so we'll do that. I'll talk to him on the side. All right, colleagues, we are done. There was another report that I wanted us to take us through and want the team to take us through. Can you take us through the report of study? Is the last report? Our meeting with NDIC and the defense industry. Minutes, sorry, report. All right, so this is just brief us about the structure of the report. Who's taking us through? Peter?
Yeah, yesterday, this is a draft consolidated report of the committee. All the engagement with the defense-related industry role players. And the first part is just the aim of the report, the process, and then contextual orientations. And after that, just the various role players. The first one more in the regulatory capacity, the NCACC. After that, NDIC, and then Arms Corps, the NEL, and then AMD. And it's concluded by the observations and recommendations and just a short note on the way ahead. Peter, please. Basically just saying that the committee, since the start of the sixth parliament, we've engaged with all those role players that I've just mentioned. And just in the last sentence there, we're just saying that this report is essential from a committee's perspective to assist the industry based on its historic and potential contribution to the country's economy, security, and potential benefits that can be derived if the sector is fully functional. And then there, just the aim is to consolidate the various inputs and then check what are the prospects and the challenges facing the defense industry as presented to the committee. And then basically that is just concludes with the observations and the recommendations, and that is just to assist us with planning our way ahead. The process, Chair, that was followed is just saying there that since the inception of the sixth parliament, Peter, please. There are the various meetings that we had with the now NDIC, the DCAC, there's the Directorate Conventional Arms Control of the NCACC. Our meetings with the NCACC on a quarterly and sometimes also the annual report, the NEL and Arms Corps, and the last meeting on the 5th of November, really recently, was NDIC and AMD. Okay, I think it's important that we just refer to the contextual orientation with regards to this report. And it's just saying that one of the biggest challenges facing the industry is the declining defense budget and its subsequent negative impact on the industry. The budget total means that the SDNF cannot modernize the acquisition of equipment and the systems while the maintenance, repair, and overall MRO is falling behind. And the fact that the SDA that we just referred to now all is designed, you know, for the SDNF's weapons acquisition and long-term research and development project is being phased out is one of the main reasons for this situation. And then we're just saying there how the defense review actually expressed itself on it, saying that we need to arrest the decline with regards to the critical capabilities. And saying that if you look at all these things and saying there and noting what the SecDef has said, please. She was saying
there without urgent, proper support, the industry would implode and even lose the MRO capabilities. It basically underscores the perilous situation facing our country. Okay, there we can just note the NCACC, how it's being established. Paragraph 2.1 is just the responsibility of the NCACC to Parliament. Peter, please. And there, Chair, we just started with some of the challenges that were highlighted. I think we're all aware that there's a problem with the system. Some people, it's basically a manual IT system. And we can also recall that Arms Corps, the CEO, actually offered, you know, to assist with the open a system to assist them. So that's the first problem with regards to the NCACC, the system that they have. Next down, please. There, Chair, I think this is an issue that you yourself also raised, is the statistics. You know, firstly, it doesn't talk about the economic impact of it. It's also not comparative, you know, with the various quarters and the various years. And then also, it's also not comparative with regards to the other role players or other countries that we are trading with. The end user certificate, as we all know, there has been a major bone of contention, but now we believe in it has been addressed. The amendment to the ECU was gazetted, and the NCAC believe that the issue is now being resolved. The next one is just about the regularity and predictability of the NCACC meeting, where the industry was saying, you know, especially during election cycles, you know, that they have challenges, you know, with having their applications approved. But the NCACC told us there that they've now addressed it. But they've also then said in the beginning of the year or since the start of COVID, you know, they had problems with getting their applications timely approved because they were not sitting regularly. Meanwhile, the industry was open for business, and the committee said that they will later on follow up on this specific issue. The next challenge here is just about the directorate's capacity. Where the industry believes that they are actually under-capacitated and they are struggling to complete with documents and the submission thereof. Okay, the next section just dealt with what the SECDEF, as the chair of ENDIC, presented, referring there, you know, how it has been established, you know, based on the recommendation there in Chapter 15 of the Defence Review. The next one, 3.1, it's just the nine initiatives of ENDIC. The first one was to draft the industry strategy. The second one was to establish the Defense Industry Fund and to draft the sector charter. And there was also a task team under NEL, the intervention plan, designation of small caliber weapons and ammunition, a resource-based alternative funding model, the export support, like the with regards to the end user certificate, and then participation in the industry, in government and diplomatic engagement. The next one is just giving more detail about the defense sector code, the fund itself, and something that we'll come back later to as well is the basically task team under NEL that ENDIC has established. Then just more information about the small arms, caliber weapons, and then a reference to the black-owned suppliers and military veterans. And these are some of the challenges that was noted by ENDIC. And the first one is just saying that the situation at the NEL is making it difficult for many of the SMEs in the sector, defense sector, to survive because they form part of the NEL supply chain. The second one is this, the decrease in the budget of the DoD has resulted in the decline of the demand, thus making it difficult for defense companies to survive. The issue of the EUC that has now been resolved. The outbreak of the COVID-19 pandemic has slowed down efforts to get a designation of small caliber weapons and ammunition to be presented to the cluster, the JCPS cluster. And then the defense sector charter is not really fully operationalized, but the steering committee is serving as the interim charter council, and it was putting mechanisms in place to ensure compliance with the code. and this included the establishment of this fund to support the SMMEs. The last one is just the enabling of non-contentious marketing, contracting, and export permits to be approved by one member of the NCACC. That was a recommendation from ENDIC. Ted, point four is just Arms Corps itself, the legislation that has established it. And then we make specific reference to the Arms Corps because Arms Corps itself is not only a sovereign and a strategic defense capability, it is also assisting with the repair and maintenance of vessels that is in need of maintenance and so on. Break down, please. There is just some of the challenges noted. The main challenge again relates to the economic situation at the NEL. The next one was in relation to the intellectual property, the IP rights. There has been a challenge over the years, and ALSCO then indicated that it has now a policy in a framework that's actually fair and favorable to all those who want to develop IP, especially those who want to invest. It was also indicated the IP belongs to the DoD and is managed by Arms Corps, and I should add by the NEL. And then also the CEO of Arms Corps indicated that they've developed an open source system, something that I referred to earlier, that can actually assist with the adjudication of the NCACC permit. And he said that he will then speak to the SecDef around this. Arms Corps also emphasized that many of the engineers that left are willing to come back, but it means the NDC needs to sort out its problem, as this is in the interest of the country and our future. Okay, the next one just deal with the NEL and the challenges that they've been having. There is the team that ENDIC has established, and basically saying that the enormous impact that the potential demise the NEL has or might have on the DoD and the rest of the industry is important to restate the development of ENDIC task team of the NEL. And he created a task team to diagnose the challenges within the organization and to make recommendations. And the task team has found that the root causes of the NEL's liquidity crisis included a collapsing governance, corruption, and inappropriate investment decisions. And the task team has made several recommendations, including the recapitalization and reset of the DoD contracts. So this is just what the acting COE then contributed, Talib Sadiq. And he's saying there that they've been struggling with liquidity challenges since May 2020, and they also had problems with paying the salaries. Secondly, they've developed a strategy, which is to decentralize the organization, where each division stands on its own in order to be client-centric. And the third one, and they were looking at structural reforms to be introduced to conclude strategic partnerships in order to get sustainable market access, as to reduce the dependency on the local industry and to bring much-needed capital into the business to strengthen the balance sheet. Then the inability to pay the salaries basically meant that they've lost very skilled persons, and some of these were losses in some critical defense sovereign capabilities, in particular in the missile division, and something that we've all been really concerned about. And then from a stakeholder perspective, the banks were reluctant to support them due to negative preconceptions about the industry. And then the second last point is the company dependency on a single client, and that is the DoD, was one of the main challenges. And the NEL is of the view that it would be good to study the trends in partner countries, such as the Middle East, to see how they have developed localized capabilities. And then there is just the challenges that we are all aware of that the NEL is facing, the knock-on effect on the SMMEs, the second one, the turnover of especially the engineers, and then I think something that we're all very concerned about, that the NEL is the major holder of South Africa's sovereign and strategic capabilities. And they say that they require an injection of around 683 million, you know, for the current financial year, just to protect and safeguard our sovereign and strategic capabilities. And then the presentation by Mr. Ndlovu of AMD, just saying, you know, that they have around 72 members and it's a voluntary association, so it means members can come and go. And then 6.1, he just referred to the state of the defense industry, its impact on national security, and I think this may be important. It says there that as an integral part of the FAND capabilities, government has control over key capabilities, even though they may be in private hands, they are not outside government control. Sari also indicated that it was a useful tool for foreign policy to supporting and allowing South African forces to assist forces of friendly countries and to assist UN deployments. In addition, the industry also support other government departments, agencies, and other sectors in the economy, such as the intelligence services, the police, home affairs, and fisheries. And so we're all aware of the tremendous impact that Sari actually has on our economy. And saying there, you know, people that have been trained, you know, in defense-related industry, they can easily find, you know, employment in other sectors because of the skills that they've acquired. So there, the next one is just the export, indicating, you know, the value of the exports. In the last sentence, we just make one specific example and saying there that the industry, for instance, stand at risk of losing opportunities in the Middle East with the value of approximately 24 billion rand. So it just indicates that it's quite a lot of money that's going around in the defense industry. And if we're not trading properly and timelessly with other partners, then we might lose those income. And so there's just the challenges they've listed. And they also make suggestions in this regard. And they're saying they what they do require is a direct, deliberate focus and the highest political support was necessary. A government-wide approach to support the Saudi, a stable and predictable local defense spending, including on research and development, a stable and sustainable denial, an effective arms control regime to facilitate arms export, and then financing and related improvements need to get attention. Carry on. So, this was the main bone of contention about the location of the industry itself. Because it says that, you know, it's not actually a true location in the Ministry of Defense, given that about 99% of the companies, you know, in the defense industry are private entities. And one would have thought some of them, you know, should also be promoted by DTI or small businesses and so forth. So they're saying that given this challenging, they are proposing that a proper coordinating structure should be introduced, you know, to just coordinate the location and the efforts of the players in the defense industry. And there is just some of the assistance that they required from the committee. And the first one is the international defense integrations are highly political. Thus, there is a need for it to be driven by political leaders. And I think you made the example of the French president, you know, when he comes to Africa, you know, he also tries to get contracts for the defense industry. And then also, secondly, there is the brand reputation management with the crisis in the Middle East region and a number of African countries, engagement with the presidency on these implications and the image of the country, and then instruments to be used by the state to support the defense industry export. And then something that we've also talked about is the approval process by NCACC should be fast-tracked, and it should be benchmarked with other countries to ensure competitiveness. And then interim measures should be put in place to allow for the industry to operate during emergency periods and election cycles. And then the permit application should be digitized, something that we referred to earlier. Carry on. So here we come to the observations and recommendations, and I think the first one was very concerning is the loss of scarce skills. For instance, around 80 engineers were lost, and then they're going to utilize their IP somewhere else, and it made life come to be to our detriment. The predictability of the NCACC meetings, the manual system of the directorate, the difference of opinion. I think this is the point that was actually noted by Atul Kumbara of Arms Corps, where he was saying that on the one end, while the NCACC, specifically Advocate Jale, was saying that everything is honky-dory in the functioning of or the processing of applications, the defense industry, one could have noted throughout that they were frustrated any delays that they are experiencing with regards to approval of applications. And then the next one there is just the intellectual property rights, and the community noted there the opinion that the IP rights could be exploited to raise revenue and wanted more clarity on the issue. Consequent management, this was strongly emphasized by AMD in saying, you know, that all the various role players should actually play their role, and if they don't, you know, there should be a consequent management. And then the assistance of the committee, just saying that the committee noted suggestions on how it can assist, especially regarding involvement of political leaders to support and promote industry support. And then the underlying impact of the NEL, I think that's an issue that runs throughout here. And lastly, related to the recommendations are just, to the observations are just the recommendations. And the first one is with regard to loss of scarce skills, where we recommend that the whole government approach should be adopted to assist and support the defense industry in order to prevent the loss of scarce skills to other countries and to attract new scarce skills to the industry. With regard to the predictability of the meetings of the NCACC, he says, although the DCAC indicated that it has now been addressed, the committee recommends that the NCACC should be alert to this concern and how it impacts on the defense industry. The NCACC should from 2020 indicate in its quarterly reports to Parliament the dates and the number of meetings held to consider export and import permits, or basically all the applications. The manual systems, given the assurance by the DHACC that they are planning to migrate to a new system early 2020, and that Arms Corps will assist them with digitizing the system, we just recommended that the committee should the parties should collaborate and ensure a speedy and a seamless migration to a more efficient and user-friendly system. With regard to the difference of opinion, the committee undertook to take this issue further at the next NCACC meeting with the ministers to raise and hopefully clarify the frustrations and to explore possible solutions in order to ensure a collaborative, coordinated, and supportive approach from all role players. With regards to the IP rights, the committee welcomed the view that IP rights can now be exploited for additional revenue, and that Arms Corps and the NEL are managing most of the rights on behalf of DoD, and recommended that the defense industry should enhance its efforts in this regard. With regards to consequent management, the committee undertook to further investigate the occasional, non-responsive, and lack of cooperation, according to AMD, with the NCACC and the ministry, given the dire need for predictability, and the regularity of the industry. Okay, just the last one, with regards to the assistance, the committee also undertook to engage the Portfolio Committee on Public Enterprises, as well as the Portfolio Committee on International Relations, in order to highlight the need for a whole government approach to support the industry. And then just lastly, Chair, on the way forward, the committee undertook to discuss this report early in 2021 and to draft a program of engagement with the relevant defense industry role players and the portfolio committees at Parliament, as well as the selected political leaders, in order to facilitate the kind of support and assistance that such a crucial contributor to our national economy and defense capability deserves. Thank you, Chair. That is the report.
Muted, Chair.
No, thank you very much. I'm sorry, Mr. Ryder. Can you go up and pick it up from the discussions? All right. Way forward. Okay, let's look at the way forward. Let's go way forward. Go down. Right, way forward. Please. Okay, this way forward. And All right. This is what SADC tabled, and it spoke respect to police intervention. SADC suggested those matters. Go down. Right. And then this is a committee observation and recommendations. Colleagues, let's start with 7.1 and those bullets underneath. Anything you want to raise as a comment? All right, go down. Go down after, right. And then go down, right. And now wait a minute. Well, let's go to recommendations. Are we done with all the recommendations? Okay, yeah. So these are the recommendations, right, up to underlying impact of demand. And then, wait a minute. No, we've done with the 7.2. Just go up. All right. These are... State the observations and recommendations. Right. These are the observations, right? And are there any questions on the resolution, on the observations or comments? Mr. Ryder?
There was one observation, if I may just come in as the stage, relating to the end user certificates. And I think that it was Mr. Mutlia, I believe, who raised it at the time. But the fact that there's a little bit of discomfort around end user certificates and how enforceable they are and how much control there is. And I believe we agreed that we were going to have a little bit more engagement on that going forward. I don't see that in the observation or the recommendation, okay?
I thought, Mr. Ryder, the issue of the end user certificate has been circled, but Mutlia is online. I would comment on this. Remember, in the past, there was insistence on post-inspection delivery. And but that has been changed to a clause that would be in a bilateral agreement between countries, how that would be oversighted. I think it was left at that. And that was gazetted. Do you still want to take that one any further? That would be.
I think you've covered it. Thank you, Chair. Yeah.
Thank you so much. All right. Okay. Thank you so much, Mr. Ryder. Let's go down. Let's go to. All right. That completes. Can I say what? Now, these are the recommendations. All right. Loss of skills, predictability of NCACC meetings. All right. Go down. Manual IT systems of the DACC, difference of opinion, and intellectual property right, consequence management, assistance of the JSCT. Colleagues, any comment on this?
Chairperson, I think from my side, I think it was well captured, and especially if I look at the way forward, that we will discuss this anyway further, so obviously there might be things flowing from this. I know the one point that we have raised during the discussion is the fact that we still experience that some of our exported munitions end up on both sides, in Libya, in Syria, in Yemen. So, and I know that's something that we have said that we must discuss further, but because the way forward basically provides for that, I don't think we have to include this in any way.
Again, no, I agree, but it was not part of the discussion at this meeting.
No, it
was, I mean, I specifically raised it. I specifically raised it where I asked, you know, what the defense industry will be doing from their side. We know that the end user certificate existed, but we also know that the, you know, that the munition exported ends up on both sides. And what is, what are they basically doing to prevent, you know, that from happening? And I think that is just something that we must take cognizance, because there will be constant pressure if we do not, you know, at least apply our minds with regards to that. Because we want to see the industry grow and develop, but we also don't want to be put in a position that, that, you know, Parliament and government must take a decision that is not good. And there's some form of responsibility on the industry, you know, to try to prevent things like that happening as well.
Okay. No, that's fine. I note that. Thank you very much, Mr. Marino. On the way forward?
Happy with that. Happy with
you. Happy with it too. All right, any more problems? For the exceptions?
I'm happy to be with you.
Mr. Marino, move. Any second then?
I second.
Mr. Chamberlain,
No, sorry, Chair. I think it was Audrey had to second again. Is that not the pattern we followed?
Oh, sure.
Come again?
Audrey had to second again. Isn't that the pattern we've established?
No, so. No, anyone can second. All right. Thank you very much. And, what was the question that the chair, the court chair, can second? That's what you're saying.
No, not at all, Jim. No, not at all. Not at all. I was saying we established a pattern earlier on.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you, Chairperson.